Last week, we began the story of David Merrick, the most successful of the post-World War II producers. A swashbuckling story full of spectacular duels with the critics, daring publicity stunts, and above all, hit shows. In his first 10 years as an active producer, Merrick presented 34 productions, of which an impressive number were successes. As the director Joshua Logan puts it,
he is really the best showman and best producer that's come along, probably better than Ziegfeld. He's had more hits than Ziegfeld.
But before we launch into part two of the Merrick saga, let's have a quiz. Who are the following ladies and what have they got in common?
Come, hit the timber, loosen up and start to limber. Can't you hear that hot marimba? Let yourself go. I can't begin to tell you how much you mean to me. My world would end if ever we were through. While tearing off a game of golf, I may make a play for the caddy. But when I do, I don't follow through, 'cause my heart belongs to daddy.
You'll hear the sound of violin out yonder where the blue begins. The moon will guide us as we go drifting alone.
Come home, Bill Bailey, won't you come home? She moaned the whole day long. I'll do the cooking, honey, I'll pay the rent. I know I've done you wrong.
And I have one red hot tip for every lady in this room. I personally wouldn't think of going into that powder room. Well, I dropped in opening night to read the walls.
How did you do? Well, the ladies you heard were Ginger Rogers, Betty Grable, Mary Martin, Martha Ray, Pearl Bailey, Phyllis Diller, Carol Channing, and Ethel Merman. And what do they have in common? Well, they all descended the grand staircase of the Harmonia Gardens restaurant and had this song sung to them.
Still growing, you're still growing.
Yes, all eight of those ladies starred in various David Merrick productions of Hello, Dolly. In 1964, the same year that Dolly opened, the prolific Merrick had five other productions on Broadway. They included the British hits Oh, What a Lovely War and A Severed Head, and Foxy, a vehicle for the beloved comedian Bert Lahr, a musical version of Ben Jonson's Volpone, but set during the Yukon Gold Rush. Foxy had a score by Robert Emmett Dolan and Johnny Mercer.
Merrick is probably our most successful producer, but he doesn't do many musicals. And I think he'd have to have some help when he did the musicals, too. He's not really a musical person.
But then he really doesn't have to be. He can simply hire persons as musical as Mercer and Dolan.
Talk to me, baby. Tell me lies. Tell me lies as sweet as apple pie. You tremble with a wild desire to light the fire in my eyes. Say that we're helpless in the hands of fate. Exaggerate if you.
Johnny Mercer's fine lyrics sung there by Johnny Mercer himself. Foxy had its original tryout in Your Actual Yukon. The Canadian government hoped that a hit show might turn the forgotten town of Dawson City into a tourist attraction, but a hit it wasn't. Nevertheless, Merrick, a Bert Lahr fan from way back, secured the rights to Foxy and presented it on Broadway. Lahr, who called Merrick the Dragon of Broadway, accused him of sabotaging Foxy by failing to advertise it properly. The critic Clive Barnes accuses him of being a very vain man who uses publicity partly for the good of the show and partly because he likes to see his name in the papers. Anna Maria Alberghetti, who starred in Merrick's musical Carnival, is somewhat equivocal.
What kind of a human being is he? I don't know, but, you know, from my experience, I wouldn't give him 100, you know. But, you know, I really don't know the man. I even went out with him a few times, you know, we dated, we would go to an opening and something. He is... You know, you never know what he's really thinking.
Well, what are David Merrick's main attributes? According to the actor Jerry Orbach...
I think an aggressiveness, a drive, a single-mindedness. He's very good with people that are good to him, and he's very bad with people that are bad to him, and he never forgets. He's like an elephant. It does him harm in some cases, and it does him good in other cases, but there's no changing him. When he's right, he's really right, and when he's wrong, he's horrid.
Which brings us very neatly to the matter of Stanley Kaufman. Kaufman was a writer who in late 1965 agreed to become the new theatre critic of the New York Times, but on one condition, that he be allowed to review the last preview of a play instead of the first night. With one day's grace, he felt he could write a better, more reasoned notice than if he dashed one off just after the opening performance. Well, it sounds perfectly reasonable, but Merrick disapproved of a show being judged even one performance before the opening, and demonstrated his disapproval in a typically theatrical way. Just before the curtain rose on the last preview of Merrick's play Philadelphia, Here I Come, the theatre was suddenly plunged into total darkness. Because of what the management called generator trouble, the performance was cancelled, with Kaufman and the rest of the audience being sent home. After refunding the customer's money and paying his cast and crew, Merrick was $2,650 poorer, but pleased as punch. Kaufman was now forced to review the play on the opening night, and the publicity value of Merrick's victory was enormous. Joshua Logan recalls one of the showman's earliest publicity stunts.
The funniest one he ever did was to take a London taxi cab to America and have it reorganized so that you could drive it from the back seat instead of the front. And he put a man who was the driver in the back seat, but he had the levers and the controls down below the window so that you couldn't see that. And in the front seat, with his hands around the steering wheel and with a taxi cab driver's hat on, was a chimpanzee. And on the side of this taxi cab, he said, "I'm driving my master to see the matchmaker." He, of course, it scared people to death in the first place.
And if Merrick's elaborate publicity stunts don't scare people, then his personality does. The gifted songwriter Stephen Sondheim, whose show A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum Merrick once came close to producing, was absolutely terrified of the showman. But someone he couldn't scare was Agnes DeMille, who did the choreography for one of his shows. In a recent book, Miss DeMille describes the ruthless business dealings and grim, intimidating personality of the late, unlamented impresario Lee Schubert, adding, "Today David Merrick attempts the same effect, but he has a sense of humor, and this spoils it."
There's always a joker in the pack. There's always a cardboard clown. The poor painted fool falls on his back, and everyone laughs when he's down. There's always a funny man in the game, but he's only funny by mistake. But everyone laughs at him just the same. They don't see his painted heartbreak. They don't care as long as there is a jester, just a fool as foolish as he can be. There's always a joker, that's a rule, but fate deals the hand, and I see the joker is me.
One of the Anthony Newley Leslie Bricker's songs from The Roar of the Grease Paint, The Smell of the Crowd. This rather pretentious musical had been a disaster in Manchester, where audiences found the pseudo-Samuel Beckett story incompatible with the star, who was Norman Wisdom. Everyone decided the show was a hopeless stinker. That is, everyone except Merrick. He had presented the first Newley Bricker's show, Stop the World, I Want to Get Off, and thought Greasepaint could equal its success. Against all advice, he brought it to Broadway, where it was a success. At this time, Anthony Newley played the Wisdom role, singing the songs in what sounded like a very cruel impression of the singing of Anthony Newley. Easier to listen to was a black singer named Gilbert Price, who scored the hit of the show with his one song.
"Bird flying high, you know how I feel. Sun in the sky, it's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me, feeling good. Yes, in the sea, you know how I feel, river running free. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me, feeling good. Dragonfly out in the sun, you know what I mean. Butterflies all having fun. When day is done, that's what I mean. And this old world, it's a new world and a bold world for me." Stars, when you shine, you know how I feel. Scent of the pine, you know how I feel. Freedom is mine. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me.
Well, are you getting the idea that David Merrick is all things to all people? So are we. According to the critic Brooks Atkinson...
David Merrick is a guy who has a pencil and paper and he figures out how much it costs. But he doesn't contribute anything in the way of ideas. He's a businessman.
And yet most of the musicals presented by Merrick have been based on his own ideas, says the director Joshua Logan.
There is a man who did know and does know what's wrong with a play, what's wrong with a scene. He has a theatrical instinct. He is known now as the abominable showman and as the undertaker. He does look a little like an undertaker. I think he'd be a very successful undertaker. He could be successful at anything that he wanted to do. He's got a very serious white face with this huge black mustache. I don't know quite how he manages that black hair.
According to Gower Champion, the director-choreographer of his next show, Merrick has one shining attribute.
He trusts his director. What David will do is stay away from rehearsals and all kind of small discussions and that sort of thing, keep the long view, keep a certain distance, which is very valuable. Then you get to Boston or Philadelphia or Washington, wherever you're opening, and then he will see it indeed for the first time as the director has had a chance to work on it and cast it and rehearse it and do all of that, and all the mechanical things are out of the way, then he can see the show and judge it almost as an audience. And that's where David Merrick is very valuable, because he, unlike other producers who become involved in the day-to-day problems and of rehearsal and all that nonsense that goes on, he doesn't, and that's very wise of him, I feel.
Sometimes in the morning, when shadows are deep, I lie here beside you, just watching you sleep. And sometimes I whisper what I'm thinking of, my cup runneth over with love.
Sometimes in the evening, when you do not see, I study the small things you do constantly. I memorize moments that I'm fondest of. My cup runneth over with love.
In only a moment, we both will be old. We won't even notice the world turning cold. And so in this moment, with sunlight above, my cup runneth over with love.
Mary Martin and Robert Preston. The entire cast of I Do, I Do, a two-character musical based on the play The Four Poster. For Gower Champion, I Do, I Do was a marvelous experience, even in the earliest stages.
The rehearsal period on that show is the most joyous, the most fun, because you're dealing with just two people, a piano player and yourself as director, and that's it, instead of having 25 dancers to worry about and three ballets and four opening numbers and costumes and scenery. So it's a joy to work in, because as a musical comedy director dealing in both direction of choreography, there's so much to do. It was rather like Carnival in that sense, that show. It requires two dynamite performers who also have to be dynamite actors, and you've got to have both. You have to have that performance, almost nightclub vaudeville ability and talent and background. And in addition to plays, you had to be a hell of an actor. And the result was that, really, I've only seen it work and known of its work. It didn't work in London, unfortunately. But it's a lovely play with some lovely songs, and it's a trick. It's really a trick. It's a tour de force stunt for two superstars, which is what it takes.
Neither was Merrick's musical 110 in the Shade entirely successful when it opened in London the following year. The songs were by Tom Jones and Harvey Schmidt, who had written I Do, I Do, and the show was set in a western state with a plain Jane heroine called Lizzie. She is reconciled to being an old maid, but when a smooth-talking stranger appears, claiming to be able to make rain, she falls in love with him.
Is it raining me? Is it really true? Suddenly I'm beautiful, being here with you, deep inside.
Is It Really Me? From 110 in the Shade, sung by Inga Swenson and Robert Houghton, who some of you might remember in Wagon Train. Now, Stuart Little and Arthur Kanter, in their book The Playmakers, wrote, "It is easier for a camel to pass through the needle's eye than for a casual investor to get into a Merrick show. And this is because Merrick has had the same small group of backers since the early days, sharing in his profits. Mind you, there were no profits to speak of in The Showman's Next Brainchild, a musical version of Breakfast at Tiffany's. He lined up an impressive cast, headed by Mary Tyler Moore, Richard Chamberlain and Sally Kellerman, for what was to be the quickest flop known to Broadway. It closed before it even opened. After 4 of 16 scheduled previews, Merrick shut down the show, manfully assuming all the blame for its failure. A year later, he presented a musical called How Now, Dow Jones, and demonstrated his capacity for being able to laugh at himself. Instead of the usual biographical note on the producer, the program carried just one 15-word sentence. Mr. Merrick is best known as the distinguished producer of the musical Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Will everyone here kindly step to the rear and let a winner lead the way? Here's where we separate the notes from the noise, men from the boys, rose from the poison. I'll be back in the bunch. I came up with a hunch. This was up and Adam Day. It's one of those spells when you hear the right bells and your horoscope tells you to say. Everyone here, kindly step to the rear and let a winner lead the way. Will everyone here kindly step to the rear and let a winner lead the way?
Here's where we separate the duck from the quack, the ace from the pack, the pip from the Macintosh is back in the group. I came up with the scoop. This was the time to rise and say, I've got in my eye such a jubilant sky that the 4th of July will seem gray. Everyone here, kindly step to the rear and let a winner lead the way. And let a winner lead the way. Oh, that's meat and taters.
One of the songs from How Now, Dow Jones, a musical about Wall Street. But even though it didn't make any money, it did better than Merrick's next show, Mata Hari, because that one expired in Washington, D.C. without even reaching Broadway. Mata Hari sounds like a tongue-in-cheek sort of show on the order of the boyfriend, and that's what the Washington audiences were expecting. But what they got was a dead serious musical with a bloody violent ending and a lot of ironic things to say about the horrors of the war to end all wars. During the show's short life, some unforgettable things happened. Scenery stuck, causing pauses which seemed even longer than World War I itself. Other scenery fell over, dances collided, people's wigs fell off, and the actress who played Mata Hari, while making a costume change in the dark, was suddenly revealed to the audience, starkers. But if you think that Mata Hari had nothing to recommend it but a naked heroine, you're wrong. It had one intensely moving song, and it was in the form of a letter sent by a young French soldier to his mother.
Mama, I am fine. We are deep, Mama, at the line. There are sounds, Mama, of the war. Rifles crack, Mama, cannons roar. I have fear, Mama, I'm afraid. Not of bombs, Mama, nor grenades. There's a voice, Mama, I can't still. And it says, Mama, can you kill? And it says, Mama, can you kill? I may die. This may be, Mama, my goodbye. It is time, Mama. There's the sun. Will I fight, Mama? Will I run? Will I fight, Mama? Will I run? He was young, Mama. He was small. I was trapped, Mama. Then he lunged, Mama, and I spun face to face, Mama, gun to guard. Then and there, mamma, I could see he was me, mamma. He was me. Just a boy, mamma. Not a man. Can I kill mamma? Yes, I can. I can kill mamma. Yes, I can.
...1967 was also the year that Merrick brought over two hits from the West End. The first play, Tom Stoppard's Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, was the most successful transplant this side of Frank Sinatra's hair, but the second play, Bill Norton's Spring and Port Wine, was a failure. But then it wasn't exactly the same play by the time it reached Broadway. In London, Spring and Port Wine was the simple story of a Yorkshire father who alienates his entire family by repeatedly trying to force one of his daughters to eat a herring. In America, the herring was changed to a mackerel, the 1960s Yorkshire setting was changed to 1940s Massachusetts, the Yorkshire family were changed to Irish Catholic Americans, and the title, Spring and Port Wine, was changed to Keep It in the Family. Keep what, I wonder? Mackerel, I suppose. Merrick's greatest success in 1967 was his all-black production of Hello, Dolly, which gave the show a much-needed shot in the arm and allowed Pearl Bailey to score a massive personal hit. Clive Barnes wrote in the New York Times, "She took the whole musical in her hands and swung it round her neck as easily as if it had been a feather boa."
When a man with a timid tongue meets a girl with a diffident air, why should the tortured creatures beat around the bush when heaven knows Mother Nature always needs a little push? I put my hand in here, I put my hand in there, and a girl over 6'3" meets a man who comes up to her ear. Surely it's obvious she'll never be seduced till some kind soul condescends to give her beau a little boost. I put my hand in here, and I twist a little, stir a little, hem a little, her a little, shape a little, mold a little, some poor chap gets sold a little, when I use my fist a little, some young brag gets kissed a little, pressure with the thumb, matrimony comes when I put my
Merrick's Black Dolly was generally hailed as a piece of pure showmanship, although that's something Burton Lane would firmly refute.
I would never in a million years call David Merrick a showman. From everything I've heard, he is a negative factor. He'll get Gower Champion. Now, if Gower Champion is about to do a Hello, Dolly, well, he's lucky. But he had Gower Champion on something which was a disaster. And, you know, he didn't know that it was a disaster until it was too late. It's a funny kind of showmanship, isn't it?
Well, that's a bit hard, Mr. Lane. After all, every showman has flops. Anyway, let's hear a bit more about it from Gower Champion himself. What was the disaster called?
It was called A Happy Time, but it was a basically downbeat, kind of sentimentally triste play, which didn't really have thrust. It didn't pull you, it didn't draw the audience into it enough for me. So that you had a title which said The Happy Time, and it was all about gorgeous pictures and films as seen in this man's eyes, but the play itself just never got off the ground somehow.
The star of The Happy Time was Robert Goulet.
Hey, come back with me, huh? Would you mind? And remember
a Christmas morning long ago, the frosted glass, the dancing snow, the happy time. Remember the painted horse, the carousel, the chocolate kiss, the caramel, the happy time. Remember a pale pink sky, your first Easter hat. And if you should ask me why, the reason I ask you this is that I want to remember you remembering the happy time. Yes, come back with me, Remember the day you found the dollar bill, or roller skating down the hill, the happy time. Remember the compliment you once received, the lie you told, they all believed, the happy time. Remember a long, deep sigh, a tentative kiss. And if you should ask me why, the reason I ask you that is this, I want to remember you remembering the happy time.
The happy time wasn't exactly that for Merrick, as the show came off before it made any money. But he had better luck with his next production, a musical version of Billy Wilder's brilliant film, The Apartment.
Promises, I'm all through with promises, promises now. I don't know how I got the nerve to walk out. If I shout, remember, I feel free. Now I can look at myself and be proud. I'm laughing out loud. Oh, promises, promises, this is where those promises, promises end. I won't pretend that what was wrong can be right. Every night I'll sleep now, no more lies. Things that I promised myself fell apart, but I found my heart. Oh, promises, they're kind of promises, take all the joy from life. Oh, promises, those kind of promises can just destroy your life. Oh, promises, promises, my kind of promises can lead to joy and hope and love. Yes, love.
The score of Promises, Promises was written by Burt Bacharach and Hal David. Now, Bacharach was looking for a new sound even more earnestly than Jimmy Stewart in the Glenn Miller story, and to achieve it, he filled the theatre with echo chambers, fiberglass panels to separate orchestral sound, and electronic booths to control disembodied choral effects. Playing the Jack Lemmon role in Promises, Promises was Jerry Orbach, who appeared 7 years earlier in Merrick's show Carnival. Now, that show had a stormy passage to Broadway, so did the new one suffer the same teething troubles?
No, I don't think there were any major problems that Merrick had to contend with like that in Promises, because we had what we felt was a pretty foolproof package. What with Burt Bacharach and Hal David doing the music and lyrics, and Neil Simon doing the book, it seemed like we couldn't get in too much trouble, you know, and we didn't. So Merrick slid along easily on that one.
Yet Merrick remembers a major problem, getting one melodic song out of Burt Bacharach.
In Promises, the hit song which I squeezed out of him late on the tour tryout of it was I'll Never Fall in Love Again, and that was the only really successful one in it. He can write the other thing, but he kept avoiding it. He wanted that Bacharach sound.
What do you get when you fall in love? A guy with a pin to burst your bubble. That's what you get for all your trouble. I never fall in love again. I'll never fall in love again. What do you get when you kiss it's a guy. You get enough germs to catch pneumonia. After you do, he'll never phone ya. Never fall in love again. I'll never fall in love again. Don't tell me what it's all about, 'cause I've been there and I'm glad I'm out. Out of those chains that bind you. That is why I'm here to remind you.
Don't tell me what it's all about, 'cause I've been there and I'm glad I'm out. Out of those chains that bind you.
That is why I'm here to remind you.
What do you get when you fall in love? You only get lies and pain and sorrow. So for at least until tomorrow, never fall in love again. I'll never fall in love again. I'll never fall in love again.
Since Promises, Promises in 1968, Merrick has had no real blockbusting musical on Broadway. The closest he's come was 4 years later when he presented Sugar, a musical based on another great Billy Wilder film, Some Like It Hot.
Doing it for sugar, I would do anything for sugar. Although I do submit when her heart is twinkling that I get a sprinkling of sugar. I just want to show her a world that she's got to adore. Sugar's one of those people that you just want to do everything for. When it comes to sugar, I find I'm generous and gentle. And because she's blonde and she's gorgeous, it's completely coincidental. Looking in the mirror, I relish the unselfish fellow I see. Doing it for sugar, I'm only doing it for sugar. And is it wrong that while I'm doing for sugar, it just kind of does things for me? She's got a chance now, a fighting chance now. We'll find $1 million surprise to light those little Polish eyes. We're doing it for sugar. We would do anything for sugar. Although I do submit when her heart is twinkling that I get a sprinkling of sugar. We are gonna show her a world that she's got to adore. Sugar's one of those people that you just wanna do everything for. When it comes to sugar,
sugar, sugar, sugar,
I find I'm generous and gentle.
Generous and gentle.
And because she's blonde and she's gorgeous, it's completely coincidental.
looking in the mirror, I relish the unselfish fellow I am. Doing it for sugar. I'm only doing it for sugar. And is it wrong that while I'm doing for sugar, it just kind of does things for me?
The Tony Curtis role in Sugar was played by Tony Roberts and the Jack Lemmon part by Robert Morse, who says of Merrick...
He's done a marvelous and a lot of work for theater. I did Sugar, and I still believe it would be a smash. It would be a wonderful hit. It's all drag, you know, and it's very funny. It's a lot of fun. And it has some of the most poignant moments in theater, I think, that I've ever done. But it's a real comic vehicle. I wish that someone... Please, someone with a lot of money, bring it over, because I'd love to do it.
Well, don't look at me, mate. I'm working for the BBC. In 1974, Merrick went to Los Angeles to try out a new musical starring Robert Preston as Mack Sennett and Bernadette Peters as his mistress, the delightful silent film comedian Mabel Normand.
A dingy curtain.
The new show had book and songs by Michael Stewart and Jerry Herman, who wrote Hello, Dolly. And as Merrick said at the time...
It's a large show. It might be the last of the large shows. I have a highly melodic score in this one I'm trying out prior to Broadway in Los Angeles. The title is Mac and Mabel, and we shall see whether that score will add a great deal to the show. It is a comedy, of course, and a love story, and it only remains to be seen in New York. It's a hit here.
A hit in Los Angeles, yes, but as the show's director, Gar Champion, says somewhat ruefully...
We had a very curious thing happen. We opened in Los Angeles at the Music Center downtown, and the show got good notices and played it for 8 weeks, and by the end of the eighth week, we hadn't worked on it and fixed it and done the usual out-of-town thing. And when we closed, we were a hit. Standing ovations, applause, all that kind of stuff. We went back to Washington, D.C., and were a flop. It was incredible. It was the same show. We did not change one line. It was something that puzzled us and astonished us, and we again went to work to try and fix it, but there was no fixing of it. It was too late by that time. We discussed this and talked it endlessly back and forth, the difference in California audiences as opposed to the Eastern, more sophisticated, especially New York audiences. It's something I would never do again. It's a very tricky thing to do.
I can promise you a happy ending that has you loving me, loving you. I promise you a happy ending like the one you've been dreaming about. Where vows are vowed, and knots are knotted, and the preacher's plotted, as the reel runs out. And so I'm strongly recommending that you pack up your old point of view. I can promise you a happy ending that has you loving me, loving you.
Of course, everybody wants a happy ending, but I'm not sure we can give you one in this case. We certainly won't fade out on our hero starving in the snow. He's a millionaire, but he does love the theatre, and the Merrick kind of show just doesn't seem to be happening much these days. He made a film recently, but he admits that he only really went into the movies because he wasn't getting enough to do in the theatre. Joshua Logan.
He's a solid man. He studies the theatre very carefully. I wish he weren't leaving it. I wish he weren't going toward films, because I think the theater needs him badly in New York. I really do. He has kept the theater going many years longer than it would have gone without him. I know that. He is a real powerhouse in the theater, and he's a dedicated man. He believes in bringing good things, too, as well as successful things, and he's established a thing called the David Merrick Foundation, which has produced some very fine things. He had dinner with us here last year with that charming wife of his. They have a lovely little baby. He still is awfully grouchy looking, awfully unhappy looking. I don't know. I can't quite tell. I've never seen him really be jubilantly happy over anything. But I have seen a twinkle in his eye when it looked like it was going to be a hit.
In the opinion of Michael Bennett, whose remarkable dance musical, The Chorus Line, is New York's biggest current success...
David's a very, very interesting man. Broadway has changed a great deal, and I think you have to be very, very healthy in order to get to a certain age in life and not to start resisting change. And I think that it's becoming just difficult for David to function with what's happened with the economy and the system and Broadway.
Go while the going is good. Knowing when to leave may be the smartest thing that anyone can learn. Go.
Well, David Merrick seems to have taken the words of that Promises, Promises song to heart. But if he can't find enough to do in the theatre and he doesn't really like films, what does the future hold? Gower Champion.
I don't know. And I don't really care.
Oh, come on, don't be evasive, Gower. What are you trying to say? Anyway, I have a sneaking suspicion that David Merrick is still stage-struck, and it wouldn't surprise me if he came up with another hit musical soon, and I think that I have the perfect subject. He's already presented shows based on the lives of such colourful characters as Gypsy Rose Lee's mother, Marta Hari, Max Sennett and Mabel Normand, so think of the entertainment value in one based on the incredible career of David Merrick, the man who's had more hits than Ziegfeld.
Michael Craig presented The American Showman, which was researched by Bill Sullivan, and this week written by Dick Vosbrough. The producer was David Ravenoven Allen. And now, here's Benny Green.
If David Merrick is probably the most successful American showman of the modern era, there's no doubt either that the new style producer-director figure of today's theatre is epitomised by Hal Prince. Merrick is accused all along the line of being interested in the business side of things, and that's that. The opposite complaint has been levelled at Prince, that he is a non-writing, non-composing overseer who likes to take a hand. Perhaps the most significant thing about his career is there's so much of it. The last three programmes in this series are all devoted to Hal Prince. And in the first one, we follow him through from the days at college, when he was voted the boy most likely to exceed, to the days when he took a hand in one of the most ambitious musical comedies of all time. Indeed, it was so ambitious it wasn't really a comedy at all. But of all things, a pastiche of a Shakespearean tragic romance.
When you're a jet, all the way from your first cigarette to your last dying day. When you're a jet, if the spit hits the fan, you got brothers around, you're a family man. You're never alone, you're never disconnected. You're home with your own. When company's expected, you're well protected. Then you are set with a capital J, which you'll never forget till they cart you away. When you're a jet, you stay again.
West Side Story wasn't the first big hit that Hal Prince was associated with, because before that he was up to his ears in the Adler and Ross shows, Pajama Game and Damn Yankees. A couple of works, by the way, that show the way the American musical was going. Instead of frilly romance, you got romance against a recognisable background. A show about a garment factory followed by a show about a baseball team. Decidedly not the stuff that Flo Ziegfeld or Victor Herbert were made of. Most of the projects that Prince has opted for have had this link with the real world outside the theatre foyer. Not that he's produced realistic shows, so much as shows that take their lifeblood from what was once real. There is a difference. What happens is that a sort of saccharining takes place, the diluting with sugared water of some aspect of history. Throw in a few songs and dances, arrange some cunning production values, and there you have it. Next week's programme involves us with a perfect example of this. A musical about that most bizarre of all objects, the totally honest politician. The crusading big city mayor, who really tries to clear up the mess. The lyricist was Sheldon Harnick, and at first Hal Prince didn't trust him. So Harnick was put on trial and asked to write four songs. He then comes along to see Prince with what he's done, rather like a schoolboy turning up with his homework.
We went up to Hal's apartment and played the four songs. One of them they didn't like very much. One of them they didn't like at all. But the two of them, they liked a lot, and an argument started about this 1917 waltz, which is called Till Tomorrow. Bobby Griffith loved it, and Hal happened to be looking me in the eye when I sang it, and I made the mistake of involuntarily smiling when I looked at him, so that he thought that the whole song was a put-on. He said, "Come on, that's a joke, that song." I said, "No, it isn't. This is supposed to sound like a 1917 song," and Bobby Griffith said, "It does sound like that song." Everything seemed to be hinging on this one song, and the doorbell rang, and our choreographer, Pete Gennaro, came in, and Hal said, "All right, now, don't say anything. Play the song." So we played the song, and Pete listened, and he said, "Gee, that sounds exactly like a 1917 waltz." And Hal said, "You're hired."
A dangerous thing to say at such a moment, because hired sounds almost the same as you're fired. Anyway, the show, which was called Fiorello, after the mayor of New York, Fiorello LaGuardia, was a big enough success, but it was followed by a few bumper episodes in the Prince career, as we'll be able to follow through next week, when we can hear the evidence of Jerry Bock and Sheldon Harnick, Bob Fosse, Stephen Sondheim, George Abbott, and Zero Mostel, who will be heard singing the opening number from one of Hal Prince's happier involvements. A funny thing happened on the way to the Forum.
Playgoers, I bid you welcome. The theatre is a temple, and we are here to worship the gods of comedy and tragedy. Tonight, I am pleased to announce a comedy. We shall employ every device we know in our desire to divert you. Something familiar, something peculiar, something for everyone, a comedy tonight. Something appealing, something appalling, something for everyone, a comedy tonight. Nothing with kings, nothing with crowns. Bring on the lovers, liars, and clowns. Old situations, new complications. Nothing portentous or polite. Tragedy tomorrow, comedy tonight.
Benny Green was previewing next week's American Showman, Hal Prince.